This is Audible.
Magical Midlife Love, a paranormal women's fiction novel. Leveling Up, Book 4. Written by K.F. Breen. Narrated by Nicole Poole. Chapter 1. Who was coming to stab me? I stood stock still next to the newly closed winery tasting room at the end of the town's main street, wrapping my gargoyle magic around me like Jasper had taught me, trying to blend into the building. Hard-eyed men and women walked down the sidewalk on the other side of the street, their movements full of lethal grace. It didn't take a genius to know they were part of Austin's budding pack. Was one of them wielding a knife? An older woman walked down the sidewalk my way, and I controlled my breathing and sucked in my gut, pushing against the wall. Neither of those things were necessary for the gargoyle magic to kick in, but given I couldn't get the hang of disappearing, I figured it wouldn't hurt. The strap of her purse slung across her full breasts and rested on the side of her soft stomach. Each relaxed hand was empty. No weapons were strapped to her thighs or her back. Not like that was a normal thing in the middle of town, but still. Out of shape, older, no weapons, she didn't look dangerous, which made her exactly the sort of person Jasper would hand a knife to and set on my trail. The rules I'd created for this particular training exercise were brutal. If whomever Jasper had set on me found me, I'd have to just stand there like an idiot while they jabbed me in a spot my magic could heal. I'd had Jasper pick the assailant so I wouldn't be able to cheat and hide if I saw them coming. The two people he'd chosen for the previous weeks had found me, and their apologies hadn't meant much when the knife was going in. This was my third attempt. I would do it this time, I could feel it. The woman paused two buildings down. I concentrated a little harder on blending into my surroundings. My stomach churned. Jasper had said I'd get a feeling in my gut. Was this it, or was I just anxious about getting stabbed? She bent to a half-wine barrel filled with blooming zinnias, marigolds, and morning glories, bright pops of color. Spring was moving into O'Brien's, soft and sweet and lovely. Spring break was next week, and my son was coming to stay. I hadn't seen Jimmy in person for the better part of a year. A wave of excitement rolled through me, but I squashed it down, trying to focus.
Well, well, well.
I snapped my head away from the woman, only to see my nemesis approaching. Sasquatch, whose real name I had forgotten in favor of the name I'd given him, had shaggy, greasy hair sticking out at all angles, a scraggly beard reaching down past his neck, and clothes covered in stains. He stopped near me, and the smell of feet wafted up from his well-worn black boots. We'd been at odds since my first night in town. He'd made a disparaging comment to me at the bar, and Austin had punched him clear off his stool. The pattern had repeated itself plenty of times since. I narrowed my eyes at him. Get out of here. I'm busy.
Busy with what? Standing around looking useless? You do that all the time. Why is now any different?
His eyes darted to the older woman down the way, just straightening up. Was Sasquatch in the know? Jasper usually picked my opponents from the bar, which was Sasquatch's second home. Since no one willingly talked to him, he listened in on everyone else's conversations. Maybe he'd heard Jasper hire the woman. Regardless, I clearly needed to find a new place and try again. If this idiot could see me, the whole town could. I stepped away from the wall. Get out of my way! He stepped with me, a smug grin on his face. My world drained of color as he reached around to his rear jeans pocket. His muscles loosened and then contracted, a pocket knife coming around in his stubby fingers. He pulled out the blade. Oh, no, I breathed, freezing. No! I could magically blast him like a bug. I could unravel his skin from his bones and let his blood leak down onto the sidewalk. I'd been afraid of him once, but now that I'd mastered most of my Ivy House magic, he was nothing more than a nuisance. Still, there were rules. I couldn't retaliate. A jack-o'-lantern grin slid across his face.
Oh, yes. Yes.
His knuckles whitened on the hilt.
Why'd he pick you?
I asked through numb lips, looking between that knife, the blade a bit dirty and rusted, and his awful smile.
Right place at the right time.
His eyes twinkled with malice. You'll pay for this, I seethed.
No, I won't. I accepted an approved job.
The older woman passed us by, her pleasant smile turning to a look of alarm when she noticed the knife. I'd picked a terrible location to fail at my magic. With any luck, she was magical, and the only person she'd tattled to was Alston. I didn't feel like lying to the police. Again.
If you hit back, it'll be against town law, and the Alpha will have to put you in your place. He's made it very clear he doesn't play favorites. He won't ruin his reputation by ignoring an attack on one of his people.
Sasquatch's smile was triumphant.
Not even for you.
I gritted my teeth. With hard work, plus help from Austin and Edgar, gardener, vampire, amateur doily maker, and interpreter of Ivy House's magical books, I had turned the tide in my magical ability. Austin and I were now about even in power. If he tried to cow me for knocking this dirty butthead around, it would be a well-matched battle. I didn't want to put Austin in that position, though. His pack was barely contained chaos right now, or so Niev had told me. He had said he needed space from our friendship, which kept skirting the line of something more, and although we trained together every day, we hadn't had a conversation that wasn't directly related to training in a month and a half. Niev, on the other hand, still visited his bar nearly every night, and she kept me up to date on the latest goings-on. Everyone had heard rumors of the great Austin Steele, the fierce polar bear shifter Alpha, and shifters were flocking to O'Brien's from all over the U.S. and Canada. Some even came from other continents. They came to bask in his power, to, hopefully, share in his prestige. And some of them simply came to satisfy their curiosity, wondering if the rumors were true, wondering if he couldn't be beaten. Whenever someone challenged Austin Steele, that curiosity was quickly sated. His primary objective in securing this territory was to protect me. He was building a castle around my keep. I would not spit in his face by going against the laws that he needed to uphold to run this town. He was my alpha here, just as I was his alpha on Ivy House soil. You may not pay for this now, but you will pay for it. I ground out, fisting my hands, bracing myself. I'll find a way that doesn't violate the town law.
Yeah, right, whatever.
Terror constricted my chest as he shifted his weight and poised. His muscles bunched and that knife sped toward me, choking me up. The point pierced my side, a momentary flare of bright white pain before I snubbed out the feeling with magic. The blade squelched as he drove it all the way in, the hilt bumping against the circle of crimson quickly expanding on my white shirt. Then he paused, his glinting eyes connecting with mine. I distantly felt Austin drawing nearer, walking up the street, but the usual fluttering of my stomach was absent, because I had a blade embedded in it. Well? I asked quietly, anger flowering in my middle. Do you plan to pull it out, or are you trying to give me rust poisoning?
That's not even a thing for magical people, Jane.
He let go of the hilt and pulled his hand back, joy soaking into his features even as blood soaked my shirt. He clearly didn't intend on pulling the knife out himself. I didn't feel that blade, and I was already working on damage control with my healing magic. But that didn't stop the primal part of me from cringing in dread. A deep part of me still connected a stabbing with a grave. My mind edged into survival mode, each second that dangerous weapon stayed lodged in my flesh, pumping out another wave of adrenaline. I could easily pull it out, sure. I wouldn't feel it. But half the time it didn't hurt to work out splinters either, and digging those out with a sewing needle had always been beyond me.
Pull it out,
I said through clenched teeth, my hands shaking, not daring to look down at it again. There's nothing in the rules about you getting to leave the knife in.
Exactly. There's nothing in the rules about leaving the knife in, or pulling it out either.
Sasquatch just looked at me with that awful smile, enjoying my turmoil.
The game is over.
Austin's deep, rich baritone washed over me. I'd lost track of his approach. Sasquatch jolted as though struck, his spine snapping ramrod straight, his beer belly popping out. He hadn't noticed Austin coming at all. A moment later, he bent like a dying reed, drooping over and reaching for the knife.
No, no!
I slapped his hand away, my reflexes faster than they'd ever been. My body stronger, too. Austin wasn't just training me in magic.
Careful!
Sasquatch staggered to the side before lunging back at me.
Alpha said the thing is done. Give me my knife.
Don't grab like that. You'll make it worse.
I slapped his hand away again and sent a tiny blast of magic to shove him back. He flew off his feet and sailed ass over end toward the building, his back hitting first, his head pointed toward the ground. My power kept growing, and every time I thought I had a handle on my range, I went and blasted someone across the room, or down the sidewalk, as the case may be. Oh well, it probably wasn't the first time he'd been dropped on his head.
Oops, too much power, I said.
Sasquatch struggled to his feet, hand to his cranium. He pointed a finger at me.
You saw her, Alpha. She assaulted me, aggressively. She broke the law. Punish her!
Austin stepped back into the gutter. Power throbbed off his robust body. Hard eyes surveyed us from a harder face. This was Austin the Alpha, not my friend and trainer. He was hearing a complaint from someone in his territory and discerning its merit before he reached a verdict. He was police, judge, and jury in this town, and he couldn't afford to let someone upset the extremely precarious balance right now. But then, I wasn't in the habit of letting people beat me up, either. This might be bad.
Chapter 2
She has a knife sticking out of her body, and she worried you'd do further damage by carelessly yanking it out.
Austin's eyes sparked with danger.
Every magical person in town is aware of her power situation. You should have known how your fumbling would be received. This matter is over.
The commanding tone had Sasquatch stepping back, uncertainty and fear on his face.
Okay, but...
Austin looked down on him, unblinking. His power throbbed once, twice, daring Sasquatch to push back. Darkness bubbled just under the surface of his eyes.
It's just...
Sasquatch pointed at the knife lamely, reminding me it was still there. Reminding me that a knife was lodged in my stomach and blood was seeping down my side.
I need my knife back.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, and currently it's in her possession.
Austin replied.
Finders keepers,
I muttered miserably, looking at the hilt with my hands spread to the sides. My mind swam. I wasn't sure if it was from blood loss or the prolonged dumping of adrenaline into my blood, or maybe my mind was convincing my body that it should be in shock.
Go!
Austin growled, and Sasquatch took off running, grabbing the waist of his pants as he did so, apparently worried they'd slip down and show his cheeks.
Except I still have a knife sticking out of me.
I swayed. Austin quickly stepped closer, and his warm hand grasped my shoulder.
It's okay,
he crooned, his tone soft and comforting, a complete 180 from a moment ago.
I got it.
I met his eyes, soaking in that beautiful cobalt blue.
I didn't mean to retaliate against him, I said, holding his shoulders for stability.
It was like gripping two large boulders. I was trying to get him to step back.
You seem to forget that I've been on the other end of that sort of accident a few times.
It's just, I know you're under a lot of pressure to keep everyone from killing each other here. I didn't mean to add to that.
His gaze dipped to my tongue sliding across my lower lip.
Jess, you don't have to apologize. I know exactly what happened. I watched the whole thing. I was at the other end of the street when he first caught sight of you. If I weren't officially Alpha now, I would have told him to get lost. Being the Alpha, I had to at least appear to weigh both sides.
I thought you didn't play favorites.
I don't, but I also don't listen to whiners who delight in stabbing beautiful women.
I smiled at him, my heart warming.
Does it hurt?
He asked softly, his hand near the knife, getting ready to pull it out. I squeezed my eyes shut so I wouldn't accidentally look down and see.
Unlike with a splinter, you couldn't just leave the knife in until it worked itself out. No, I think I've mastered my healing magic. It's just... I blew out a breath. My brain is bleeding in panic every time I think about it. I have a knife sticking in me, man. For 40 years, I've lived with the idea that being stabbed is a potentially life-threatening situation. It's hard to ignore that just because I don't feel the wound. It's hard to get used to. People in shock don't feel things either. Shock means something very bad has happened to you. I can't...
I'll handle it, okay?
His breath dusted my face, spearmint and something sweet. Did you eat cake? I could use a slice of cake. I haven't had cake in... I trailed away, wondering what the hell was taking him so long. Just yank it out already. I flinched at the thought.
Listen,
he said, his voice still so soft, so comforting.
I wanted to talk to you about the winery.
As in the winery, he'd asked me to buy and run with him. The arrangements had already been made, but what if he changed his mind? Did he think it was a bad idea for us to work together? A wave of worry washed through me, and I blinked my eyes open to see his expression. His hand moved so fast that I didn't register it. He grabbed the hilt and yanked. I cried out, bending in anticipation of a pain I didn't feel. A gush of warmth soaked my shirt and then dribbled onto the lip of my jeans. Deep crimson coated the blade in Austin's hand before he dropped it to the ground and pressed his palm against my wound, bracing his other hand against my back, using pressure to staunch the blood flow. Shifters healed fast, and I healed faster, when I was on my game. But for a handful of heartbeats, magical people bled like anyone else.
Sorry, I just mentioned the winery for distraction purposes.
Austin grimaced at me, and his smell permeated my world, clean cotton and sweet spice. I'm good. I touched the corded muscle of his bare forearm. The worst is over. I glanced down at the knife. Do you really tell people about my magic?
Absolutely. Everyone is warned. I make it very clear that I can't control you any more than you can control yourself. People are instructed to leave you alone, and if they don't, they must take what comes. They also know that your property is not part of my territory, and if they trespass, I cannot help them.
I widened my eyes at him, back to gripping his flaring shoulders while he pressed against my wound. But Sasquatch said,
Ryan just doesn't seem to learn his lesson.
I tapped his hands. I'm good now, thank you. He slowly pulled his hands away, not seeming to notice the flare of crimson staining his palm.
I don't like this game, by the way,
he said, a growl working into his words.
I don't like you placidly allowing people to hurt you. If they hit wrong, they could kill you before you could do damage control.
I have Jasper pick people because he's a good judge of character. He usually picks more trustworthy people, though. He either didn't know that Sasquatch and me...
He knew. He's trying to push you, I think.
Ah. I frowned down the street, noticing Jasper lounging against the wall, easily blending into the building behind him, utterly invisible to everyone except for me, because I could see through a gargoyle's glamour like magic. Magic I could not figure out how to apply to myself.
It's not working.
Austin turned before gently placing his hand on the small of my back, guiding me down the street. He scooped up the knife as we went.
I know I said I'd defer to your judgment of what you can handle, but with all due respect, just because you can handle it doesn't mean you should.
I sighed with frustration. I keep hoping it'll work. A man walked toward us with effortless grace and hard gray eyes. Shifter.
Alpha,
he said as he approached, stepping into the street and offering a slight bow.
Miss?
Damn that, Mr. Tom, I grumbled, Austin ignoring the man completely. It was apparently an Alpha custom to ignore greetings from townspeople and pack members. He keeps convincing people to call me Miss instead of just letting them call me by my name.
He wants you to have some semblance of a title. It isn't a terrible idea.
Don't you start. Turning this town into a big shifter pack is your thing. You need the title. I don't. I'm just a homeowner.
The owner of the most powerful magical home in the world with the ability to create your own army if you so choose.
Okay, let's settle down. No more reading up on the history of Ivy House and its heirs. This is modern times. If I created an army, I'd have the government swooping in thinking I was a terrorist. Besides, I'm not trying to form some magical empire. I just want to defend my home. I smoothed my hair back, lowering my brows at him. We slowed to a stop on the corner. You know what I mean, though. No more asking Edgar about the history of the house. It's giving you crazy ideas. He looked away.
I ask Edgar because I need to know the ins and outs of what I am guarding.
You don't. I do. I looked off toward the house, crouching in its wood, not visible from the town's hub. There's a list of vulnerabilities I don't understand and don't have the knowledge or magic to work out.
No sign of anyone to fill that summons?
I'd sent out a magical summons, asking for a mage who could help me. Over a dozen had shown up, trickling in with their swagger and egos. One practice session, though, and each and every one of them had been fired or quit. None of them had been powerful enough to work with me. Most of the mages had assumed, wrongly, that I would know some of the basics of spellcasting, based on my age alone. I'd changed their perception quickly. I'd nearly blown off a mansplainer's head by accident. He'd stopped splaining real quick and got the hell out of there. I'd almost killed another, thankfully able to patch him up before all of his blood leaked out. He'd accused me of tricking him, while sobbing. A woman had admitted she wasn't the right fit after losing half of her robe to a spell gone wrong. My power blindsided them, one and all. My complete lack of knowledge widened their eyes. My haywire spells sent them running. I'd had to devise a test to weed out the duds. I'd rigged up a spell to send applicants to Agnes's shop. Once there, she'd instruct them on how to create the spell capable of hiding them from Ivy House's detection. The challenge was to ingest the spell, mosey onto my property, and knock on the door. Simple as that. Many had tried. All had failed. Nope, I said, dabbing at the garnet stain ruining my shirt. I probably should have worn black today. I'd really thought I'd get it this time, though. I'd hoped to show everyone my clean white shirt with a triumphant smile. 5 came last week. I doubt they're even from the summons anymore. I think word has gotten out that there's an open mage position and people are just showing up to apply. 3 of them were able to make the potion, but not well enough to mask their heat signatures from Ivy House. She booted them off the property with the new trap Edgar installed. Austin shook his head slightly.
You guys in that house...
We're not normal, I know.
No, you are not. Effective, but not normal.
He paused for a moment.
Yes, it's probably word of mouth at this point, which is why only the lesser mages are coming to apply. More established mages might have ignored the summons entirely, if they're happy where they are.
Austin's upper body tightened up, his pecs popping through his shirt as his bicep strained the white cotton, flexing so as to prevent himself from releasing tension through a physical tick, like running his fingers through his hair. He'd had to make some changes since assuming the alpha role.
What did you want to do that you can't do anymore?
I teased. His gaze zipped to me and then away. His lips quirked, but he gritted his teeth again, his face in hard lines that somehow didn't detract from his handsomeness.
It's not that I can't anymore, it's that you loosen me up too much and I forget my place.
Your place? At the top? His gaze connected with mine, this time digging in, primal and dominant. A zip of excitement tore through me, and I felt loose and tight at the same time. A feeling I fully realized that was not the way a person was supposed to feel with a friend.
Yes,
he said. And why can't you smile and tuck your fingers into your belt?
I wasn't going to tuck my fingers into my belt, and it's because I have a reputation to uphold.
The reputation of a grumpy guy who wants to scratch his chest?
The reputation of a hard ass who won't stand for anyone stepping out of line. If you show weakness as a dominant figure, someone will prey on it. And no, I did not want to scratch my chest.
How is smiling or running your fingers through your hair? His eyes crinkled.
Caught me.
I laughed. How is that a sign of weakness? I don't get it. People who allow themselves to feel and show emotion are not weak. They're stronger, actually.
Honestly, I don't know why, but when an alpha is too nice, too easy, too expressive, he or she gets an increased number of challenges. People see me loosening up as a green light for them to do the same, and for violent people, that often takes the form of challenges and rowdy behavior.
It means more work for you, basically.
Exactly, yes.
So you'll never smile again? Even though he must have known I was teasing, his expression turned uncomfortable, and he shifted his body weight away from me. Looking toward the opposite side of the street, he said,
There are a few exceptions.
Like? I rolled my hand in the air, not sure why he was forcing me to drag information out of him today. Of course, it had been a month and a half since we'd had a normal conversation, minus the rest of my demented Ivy House crew. Clearly, he'd forgotten how. He shifted his weight again, antsy to go.
Like when he's in private with those closest to him.
But not in public? He paused for a beat.
In public, people only give exception to an alpha when he's with his mate or his offspring.
Well, at least that's something. It would be hard to date if you couldn't laugh at your date's jokes.
No.
His tone was hard.
Not a date, a mate. It's a magical bond that manifests physically, similar to the magical link we have from Ivy House, but much deeper, more primal. It changes a man. It makes him less reasonable, less logical.
The full weight of his focus came back to me, punching through my humor and lightness like a steel mace.
People forgive an alpha for smiling with his mate or offspring because they know if they do anything that might harm them, even indirectly, the alpha will lose his mind and end the threat with unspeakable force. He will protect his own with everything in him. The smallest slight can turn into a bloodbath. It is safest for all to give an alpha leeway when he is with his mate or children.
I blinked, my eyes wide, his tone and bearing hostile and haunted. That woman from your past, she was your mate?
No, I thought she would be at one time. The reason I acted out back then was because I was young and dumb and full of...
He stopped himself.
Even without that bond, though, I was a menace to society. Even without it, I put people in the hospital and nearly killed my brother. What do you think might have happened if she'd been my mate?
I nodded slowly, watching him, aching for him. I could feel his pain through the magical link we shared. I tended to unblock it these days when talking to him, needing to feel his emotions to gauge what was behind that hard, expressionless mask. Gotcha, I said softly. I'll be careful not to badger you into smiling in public. I assume it's fine on Ivy House soil since it's not your territory? He watched me silently for a beat. His emotions flicked from one to the next so fast that they were just a jumble of uncomfortable. He finally nodded. Well, there you go then. You just have to stay for a moment after training one of these days. I'll get Mr. Tom to tell you some jokes. He's got a few zingers. Of course, he doesn't realize they are jokes, since he's the punchline and all. He swore under his breath and looked away.
It's a lesson in self-restraint speaking with you. Anyway, listen, no biggie, but...
His muscles popped again and his jaw clenched. I laughed and pointed at him accusingly. Thumbs in belt loops.
Hands in pockets. I did actually want to talk to you about the winery. Mr. Tom sent through the check. He said you'd approved the expense. You still need to actually sign the paperwork. My lawyer is putting that together now. We'll be partners, 50-50. Is that still good?
I swallowed. Yeah, good. Sounds good. My son is coming for a couple days, but outside of that, I'm free. While I was glad he hadn't decided to back out after all and supremely excited about Jimmy's visit, I felt weighed down by the memory of the house financial ledger splayed in front of me in the office. I'd never seen such large numbers in my life, and I was the one responsible for the estate, which was fine, beyond fine,
except the generous gift came with an unexpected commitment, something no one had thought to mention to me when they'd explained about the whole magic thing. I'd finished mastering the first spell book Ivy House had provided for my training, and although we still had a ways to go in Book 2, it was time for me to claim the full gamut of my magic, apparently. But before that final burst of power was unleashed, I needed to give a blood oath, a blood oath, to protect the house and the people in my circle, to officially become their protector and provider, to become a leader, like Austin was for his pack. Once I made that oath, I'd be stuck in this position forever. Forever! There would be no divorce court to get me out of this one, no do-overs. I would literally be the heir of Ivy House until I died, and it would almost certainly be a bloody death. Because one of the supposed upsides of the blood oath was that I, and my crew, would get to live forever. Given I was one of many heirs, it wasn't a leap in logic to realize my predecessors had all been killed, and that the same bloody fate was in store for me one day. If I took the oath. Chapter 3.
How'd you get your son to come?
Austin asked, back to facing me again, bent a little to study my face. I closed down the link between us so he wouldn't feel my churning emotions. He might want to talk about things. I most certainly did not. Easter break is coming up. He broke up with his girlfriend, so he's free. I rolled my eyes, but a grin broke through. I missed the little goblin terribly, horribly. I also think he got some pressure from his dad to come home. He's not really excited about meeting the new stepmom.
Oh, did your ex get remarried?
I pulled up my shirt to check my blood-crusted skin. A small pink spot of crinkled skin was all that was left of the stab wound. No, but you know what I mean. The girlfriend. They're living together, so it's probably only a matter of time.
Does that hurt you?
I furrowed my brow, looking at him, then scoffed at his expressionless face. Do you think it should? This stoic thing you've got going on is annoying. I can't read you anymore. I tapped into the magical link again, feeling more confusion. Laughter burbled out of me. No, it doesn't hurt me. Honestly, I don't really care one way or the other. I want him to be happy, and I hope he wants me to be happy. He and I didn't work out, and that's okay. I sincerely hope she's cool, because my son will be the one who suffers if not. Austin nodded.
It's just that a lot of divorces end badly. There are hard feelings on one side or the other.
I mean, we're not friends or anything, but I don't see the point in being bitter. I wouldn't change my past, and I'm happy where I've ended up. Mostly, except for some official house issues. I pushed away thoughts of that damned office and what was expected of me. It took some hard times and some heartbreak, but that's life. The hard times make us appreciate the good times. His focus was intense, his eyes rooted to mine, his body frozen. What? I asked, suddenly uncomfortable. Have I turned into one of those annoying life is sublime people or something? Too chirpy? A small smile flirted with his lips, and for once he didn't dampen it.
I continually look up to you, Jacinta. It feels like I never really learned the rules of being an adult, and you're teaching them to me, one by one.
Good Lord, Austin, you're in trouble if you're getting life tips from me. I gestured in the direction of Ivy House, silently asking if he would walk with me. For a moment, I thought he was going to say no. He glanced in the direction of the bar, indecision on his face, but finally he stepped forward. I'm a mess, I said, falling in step with him. You know I'm a mess. You're the one that always builds me up when I'm wallowing. He shook his head, glancing to his left, where Jasper shadowed us on the other side of the street. You can smell him from way over there, I asked.
Just barely. I can sense him. That gargoyle can inflict some serious damage. I don't need to see or smell him to know he's there.
Like a sixth sense? Women's intuition type of thing?
Exactly, yes. All animals and people have the innate primal ability to sense danger. It's built into us. Women have to listen to it more than men because you are so often prey. Shifters are more in touch with their primal sides in general, so we pay attention to it. The best of us have cultivated the sense into a defensive measure.
I don't need to ask if you rank yourself as one of the best.
No, you don't. You already know that I am.
I shook my head. He wasn't putting on airs. He was stating a fact. Something occurred to me. Damn it! I bet Sasquatch smelled or felt me. That's how he knew I was there.
No, he saw you. The whole street saw you.
No one on the other side of the street looked at me, I argued. Usually your people acknowledge my presence.
They knew you were playing the game, though I really can't have people stabbing you in public, Jess. More magical people have moved into the area, but there are still a lot of Dicks and Janes. That's not something they should see. Please remember that in the future. But anyway, my people were giving you space. It's not polite to point out someone's failures.
Well, I huffed. Maybe they could have acknowledged me so I'd know my magic wasn't working.
That'd be cheating.
You're quickly becoming my least favorite person. He barked out a laugh before wrestling his features back into submission. I smiled as I watched. You're going to have to beat up like 5 people after that outburst. His lips tweaked before settling.
Probably.
I sighed, taking in the lovely late March day, the sun warm on my face and a cool floral-scented breeze tickling my skin. I'm out of my mind excited for my son to get here, but I'm trying to calm down. Just because of how it went with my parents, you know?
Are you going to tell him you're magical?
Yes, as soon as I get up my nerve. I won't be able to hide it, so I might as well just hope he accepts it. I'm not allowing myself to worry that he'll... I shook my head, not even voicing the thought. He's always been a good kid and a mama's boy. Let's hope that's enough to keep him from... I shook my head again, fear warming through me before I could shove it away.
It'll go well.
Austin rubbed my back as we walked.
Your parents were a tough situation, and that ended up just fine, even if they did assume you were the head of a cult.
I chuckled, comforted by the warmth seeping through his touch.
When's he supposed to get here?
Austin asked, his hand slipping down to the small of my back. Tomorrow. That's why I canceled training. I'll probably be sitting in the front room pretending I'm not anxiously looking out the window every second.
Well?
Austin stopped near the no outlet sign at the corner of my street.
If you need anything, call me.
Are we... I pointed at him as he made the turn back. Are we back to being friends then? He didn't smile at my teasing.
You're one of the most important people in my life, Jess. We'll always be friends. I'll make sure nothing gets in the way of that.
You need to lighten up.
I'm the Alpha. I don't lighten up.
He winked at me, which I appreciated all the more because I knew it couldn't be on the approved list of social interactions.
Can I ask a favor?
He said. Sure.
I'll need to run some training exercises with the new pack members, see what I'm working with, and I wondered if I could use the Ivy House woods. I can feel people on the grounds better now, and it would be helpful to...
Of course. Just make sure to enter the grounds before the others so she knows not to harm them. And don't allow any stragglers. Ivy House is very moody lately, and she often acts before I can defuse the situation.
How do you defuse the situation?
By taking control of the arsenal. It's like grabbing a plastic sword out of a child's hand so the kid doesn't thwap someone.
I didn't know that was possible.
It is once the air has enough power and control. Something glinted in his eyes, and I found myself tapping into our connection. His pride beamed through it, making my face heat.
Any idea how much power you have yet to inherit?
I don't know how much is eventually coming, no. Edgar thinks I'm over halfway there because we've made it through the first book. Austin's eyes crinkled, and that feeling of pride almost overwhelmed me.
I'll have to work hard to create a castle that is worthy of your keep.
I shrugged, my embarrassment flaring higher, although I wasn't sure why. I need more instruction, though. The books only have so much. The instructions are literal, and there's not much room for reinterpretation or tweaking. I need a powerful teacher who can help me with nuances.
It'll happen.
He nodded to me.
You sent out that summons. The right mage will come.
He took a step back, and his muscles popped once again. He gritted his teeth.
Hands in pockets,
he murmured, taking another step back.
I have to get going. Text me when your son is around. I'd like to meet him, see if he's as crazy as his mother.
He gave me a brief smile before turning, clearly willing to beat up a few more people to give me a proper goodbye. He's conflicted about... Sensing another presence, I cut myself off and spun around, ballooning my magic around me even as I sent out a wave of power with a ha! Chopping my hand through the empty air for emphasis. Once that would have been a ridiculous karate chop. Now it was an unnecessary flourish. Austin turned just in time to see Jasper go sailing, up over the stop sign and into the trees, catching halfway up before tumbling down, hitting a dozen or so branches before he splatted onto the dirt.
Oh my God, are you okay?
I rushed to Jasper as Austin kept going, probably figuring it was just another day when dealing with me. He was right. Jasper lay with his hands spread out to the sides, wheezing.
Sorry,
I said, sending a prod of magic to make sure nothing was broken or punctured. Finding he was just bruised, I quickly repaired the damage.
Are you okay?
You've taken away the pain. I am okay. Just dazed.
Okay.
I rested my forearms on my knees as I looked down at him. He didn't make a move to rise.
Do you...
I bit my lip. Should I help you up, or... He struggled to his side before pushing up onto his knees.
Was that punishment for using the hairy shifter in your training?
I grabbed his arm and hauled him to his feet. No, I was just distracted and didn't hear you creeping closer.
Why use ears? You can feel me.
Oh, no, I could have sworn I told you. Sorry, I usually block the links to give us all some privacy. He braced his hands on his lower back and arched back, trying to stretch it out even though he couldn't feel the pain anymore. It gave me a little validation for my reaction to the stab wound.
You've said you block it, yes.
He nodded, dropping his arms.
But since it has never been blocked, I assumed I was still on trial.
I blinked at him for a moment.
What do you mean it isn't blocked? I'm blocking it right now. You shouldn't be able to feel my presence or emotions or anything. I can't feel yours.
His dark eyebrows drew in.
I can still feel your presence and confusion.
I blinked at him. He stared at me. I pulled the block away, his confusion and wariness immediately rushing in.
Is that any different? I asked.
Is what any different?
Frustration boiled within me and his wariness grew.
You feel my emotions all the time? I demanded.
He stiffened, and I could sense his anxiety through the link. He was stopping himself from stepping backward in the face of my anger.
Yes.
Do you always feel it at the same strength? The feelings through the link never dim or anything?
I can't feel emotions when you're asleep, just your location or proximity. When you startle awake, it wakes me.
The heat drained from my face.
What about when...
I cleared my throat.
What about after I go to bed but before I actually go to sleep, like late at night?
When you pleasure yourself? Yes, I feel that.
I could do nothing but stare, in mute horror. Whatever he felt through the link got the words flowing.
At first that confused me,
he said,
since you did not express interest in bedding me. Then I thought maybe you were trying to pleasure me through the link. Only it was just the feeling of pleasure and not actual pleasure, if that makes sense.
My expression clearly insinuated that it didn't.
I could sense you were feeling pleasure, but it wasn't directly manifesting into my pleasure, so I finally realized the link was like a two-way radio and each person controlled the volume from their side.
This was the most he'd ever talked in my presence. He rarely said a couple of sentences jammed together, let alone a whole paragraph. This wasn't the subject I'd have chosen for him to find his voice.
Please tell me you started turning the radio down during those times, I whispered.
Wariness crowded the link now, so heavy that I felt like I was drowning in it.
I didn't know I should,
he responded.
Gargoyles are sexual beings. We share it freely. I thought...
His words ceased at the shaking of my head. at the continued horror that was surely on my face. Not that he'd need the cue, he could apparently feel it. I turned and headed for the house, my mind whirring. "Do you know if it's the same with Ulrich?" I asked.
"I have not asked,"
he said, falling in behind me. It occurred to me that one or the other, Jasper or Ulrich, was always out in the halls whenever I got up from a nightmare, a frequent occurrence lately. Almost as if they knew what was happening. And then there was Mr. Tom, who was always one step ahead of me when it came to getting up in the morning, either waiting by my bed or getting coffee ready to bring up. He could accurately predict my hunger and had a sixth sense about what I needed before I asked for it. Because he'd been feeling my emotions the whole time. We neared Ivy House, its massive shape cloaked in dark shadows that matched my mood. Niev sat on her porch across the street, a rock in hand. She was watching a man who'd stalled in front of Ivy House. He reached into the satchel hanging at his side, probably to grab a newly created potion. Given she hadn't thrown the rock yet, she knew he wasn't a tourist. Now she was watching to see if he'd become my next professor. I had my mind on other things, mainly the fact that Mr. Tom and the gargoyles were not the only people who'd been lying to me. Austin had been able to feel me all this time as well. He'd randomly called when I was upset for some reason or other, or in danger, to check in. The coincidence had always been welcomed. But now I realized those calls hadn't been random. He'd been responding to my distress. He hadn't turned down the volume on his side. At least he didn't all the time. In this time of peace, did he still feel everything I felt, even though I was giving him the privacy I thought he wanted? My gut pinched in anger, and I started forward again, Jasper shadowing me, back to silence. He hadn't apologized. And why should he? He hadn't known any better. Austin did. The man in front of Ivy House upended a bottle of yellow potion into his mouth before putting it away. "Not enough power," I murmured. The color was wrong for that potion, which meant the creation wasn't powerful enough to mask him from Ivy House. I quickly crossed the street onto the sidewalk, passing in front of Niev's house, Jasper following suit. The maid stepped onto the walkway leading to my front door. One hesitant step, two, picking up the pace now, four steps, five. He reached the magical panel Edgar had installed in the sidewalk. I'd covered it with a simple masking spell, blending its look and characteristics with the landscape around it. A good maid should have been able to recognize the spell. Fuzzy edges and a slight sheen gave it away. The panel popped up with a loud snap. The man didn't have time to swear. The vial flew out of his hand. His body soared up into the air, the spelled and spring-loaded panel flinging him in an arch. He windmilled his arms as he rotated.
"Whoa!"
He smacked down onto the pavement in the street, his arms splaying out and his satchel half under him. Niev cackled, leaning back in her rocking chair and holding her stomach with one hand.
"What the—"
The man flailed like a turtle on its back.
"Why—"
"Here you go, a participation medal."
Niev pushed to her feet and hurled the rock at the man. It pelted his chest.
"Hey!"
The man jerked, flailing harder now. Niev doubled over, guffawing. She loved that new ejection cord, as she called it. She also loved sending the failed candidates running. She scooped up another rock and threw it, cracking him in the side of the head.
"Have to be stronger than you are. Now off you get."
She threw another.
"No time to waste."
The man cried out, finally making it onto his feet. The satchel dragged at him as he stood, anger tightening his limbs. He faced Niev down, his power surely building, probably readying a spell. I hurried forward to intercept, but I needn't have bothered.
"Oh, so you want to play cops and dinguses, do you?"
Niev stripped out of her clothes like a woman on speed, her movements that of someone half her age, her deftness and strength complements of Ivy House. The magic would have made us all young, too, but I'd accepted only some of the perks. I'd earned my age, and I wasn't ashamed of it. The man lifted his hands to fire off a spell. but she'd already changed into her nightmare alicorn form, with ink-black scales and a flaring golden mane, her golden hooves drumming against the ground as she charged at him. She lowered her head, pointing her crystalline horn at his chest.
Holy!
He fired off the spell, the blast going wide, before scrambling out of the way.
Apuka!
He choked out, panic riding his words. Niev ran past him, narrowly missing an impaling strike. The man would have no way of knowing she'd aimed badly on purpose. She wasn't on Ivy House soil. She knew better than to kill someone unprovoked in Austin's territory. She had a very, very short list of things she feared, and he was high on that list. I ignored her antics, my mood souring further. Yet another mage had failed the tests, and I had to wonder if anyone appropriate would show up. I walked past the mock battle in the street and magically reaffixed the trap panel before pushing into Ivy House a moment later. Mr. Tom was walking down the hall toward me, his tuxedo wrinkle-free in opposition to his lined face. His wings looked like a cape, brushing the backs of his legs. A sandwich waited atop a silver tray next to brown liquid in a crystal glass. Iced tea, no doubt.
Good afternoon, miss.
He said, his voice stuffy.
Would you be taking lunch in your room, perhaps? Maybe overlooking the gardens?
That spot always calmed me. He knew that. Given what he could sense through the link, he knew I needed it. I clenched and unclenched my fists. Why didn't you tell me it doesn't do squat on your end when I block my magical link to you? Mr. Tom stooped in front of me, and his snobby butler's facade slipped.
Ah, you clued into the real nature of the link, I see.
My anger burned brighter. Yes, I did. You've all been keeping a very important piece of information from me.
It's been a collective effort of sorts, yes, miss. We had sound reasoning to do it.
That right? I glanced back at Jasper. You may go. Those words made it sound like he was a servant, which I didn't love, but it was the nicest way I'd found to politely tell people to get lost. Otherwise, there would be a four-letter word involved.
Of course, miss,
Jasper mumbled, and regret curled through the link. He'd realized, belatedly, that the others had been purposefully keeping the link thing a secret. And what sort of sound reasoning would that be, Mr. Tom? What sort of sound reasoning would excuse anyone, everyone, for refusing to give me the same privacy I've given all of you? Niev let herself into the house, having clearly scared off the mage.
Let's sit and talk about it, miss.
Mr. Tom gestured toward the front sitting room. I don't want to sit and talk about it, Mr. Tom. I want to hear your very sound reasoning, and then I want to do something horrible. Do you have CDs? I kind of want to scratch all your CDs.
Your honesty is refreshing, miss.
Mr. Tom sniffed.
But no, I have moved into the modern times, digitally. You'll have to find something else to ruin, I'm afraid.
What's going on? Niev asked. Mr. Tom set the tray down on the side table further in the entryway, pushing aside an antique vase crawling with mustard leaves and tangerine thorns.
Miss has recently learned that she can only block her side of the magical link.
Ah! Niev backed up and leaned against the wall. Why didn't anyone tell me? I demanded, magic roiling within me. Why? I look like an absolute fool. Jasper thought I was trying to pleasure him through the link of all things. Can you even fathom how embarrassing that is? No! What sort of agent would think you'd give someone like him the time of day? Niev said, grossly missing the point. Edgar opened the door and popped his head in.
Is everything okay?
I rounded on him. Before I could get a word out, his eyes widened and he ducked back out, slamming the door on himself to get away. Clearly, he'd felt my anger. I barely stopped myself from magically ripping the door open and dragging him back in with invisible hands just so I could yell at him, too. I was that mad. No, it wasn't just anger. I felt embarrassed, betrayed.
I'd been lied to this entire time by people I trusted, people I cared about. They'd collectively kept something big from me, and here I stood on the outside looking in, vulnerable.
You've uncovered a grave error on my part, miss.
Mr. Tom bowed his head solemnly.
I did not take the new recruits, Jasper and Ulrich, aside and explain how and when to deaden the link. They can set it up so the link automatically muffles when you're engaged in certain activities such as personal time.
My face heated. I knew what he meant.
Locations can also deaden the link, like the bathroom. Ulrich did mention that he'd figured out how to quiet the link for a little peace of mind. I can easily train them in ways to increase your privacy. You see, it isn't as bad as you thought.
Anger blistered and power boiled. It's not up to you to decide when you peek on me and when you don't need to, I ground out. I will not tolerate having no control over my privacy. I don't want Jasper listening in when I'm otherwise occupied. And what if I start dating? It'll be like having a bunch of voyeurs.
In fairness, we haven't any privacy either,
Niev said, unconcerned with my anger.
You control when to use the link and when not to.
I keep it blocked unless it's an emergency, I replied.
As do we. Well, most of us, anyway.
She side-eyed Mr. Tom.
Some of us are like mother hens.
My job is to look after her, he said. The link helps me do that, which is why there is a link in the first place.
Did you tell Austin how and when to deaden the link? I asked. Mr. Tom pursed his lips.
No, I did not. An oversight I will happily remedy.
He knows how, Niev cut in. Maybe not automatically, which he'll be happy to learn, I imagine. But he knows how to deaden it when he wants to. Doubt he does very often. He can't be around, so he has to keep an eye on ye in other ways, Jesse. It's his job. It's all of our jobs. This is what we signed on for. You have to let us watch over you.
I let you watch over me, I said. I let you tag along, barge into my room, keep tabs on my location. I've been pretty lenient with all this. In return, you lied to me. Don't you see? It isn't just that I am incredibly embarrassed that my private time was spied on, or guilty that every time I wake up and wander around the house, all of you wake up too. It isn't even my frustration that I can't have a moment alone, totally alone, to miss my son or feel sorry for myself in other ways. It's all of that plus the deception. Austin made a big deal about wanting out of this magic, about wanting privacy, and I gave that to him, only to find out he's been emotionally watching me. That sucks.
He didn't at first, Niev said. He started to pay it heed with the first wave of danger. He wasn't doing it to spy. None of us are doing it to spy. And if you're feeling sorry for yourself, we just tune you out, so we do. We've got our own problems. We don't need yours, like.
But you're smart, so you are.
And we knew you might find a way to cut us off if you knew the truth. And if you find yourself in a spot of trouble and the danger seems great enough, you might try to hide yourself to protect us. We couldn't take that chance. You're too damn nice, girl. You know you are. So we deceived you, as you say, to help protect you.
What she said made sense, but it still stung. They should have been more open with me. Maybe not right in the beginning, but we'd been through a few battles by now, and I could see the value in what she was saying. At the same time, they were the original crew of this place, deeply entrenched in their positions and their ways, and I could forgive the misstep. I would also acknowledge that the Jasper and Ulrich situation had been an oversight on Mr. Tom's part. Fine. People make mistakes. But Austin, that guy had made a big deal about privacy. A big deal. He knew I didn't tap into the magical link unless I needed emotional cues to interpret his new expressionlessness. If he'd decided to keep his side open, he should have said something. I had trusted him from day one. Why didn't he trust me? If he'd explained that he was keeping the link open to ensure I stayed safe, protecting my privacy as much as possible, I would have been okay with that. I would have understood. But he'd said nothing, not a peep. Nor had he hinted that the others could tell every time I was sad or anxious or moping. No,
He'd helped ensure that everyone in the crew could open me like a book to be read at their leisure, that Ulrich and Jasper could peep in on my most personal moments. He would tear down the world if someone had done that to him. Tear it to the ground. My heart ached with the betrayal, my eyes stung with unshed tears. I'd always thought Austin and I were a team, the two normal ones in a maelstrom of weird. I'd missed hanging out with him something awful these last weeks. I'd longed for him to randomly call me, like he had at the beginning. Except it hadn't been random at all. He knew when I was okay. He even knew when I was lonely or sad.
"Let's have some space, Jess," I imagined him saying. "Let's take a step back and clear our heads. But only you will feel lonely. I'll be good because I'll have the reassurance of your presence with me all the time."
This wasn't how friends treated each other. I blinked away the tears and slowly blew out a breath. I hated that they could all feel my heartache and the cracks forming in a trust I'd once valued so highly. Anger was less embarrassing than mopey sorrow. "What a dick," I said to no one.
"Uh-oh, looks like some fireworks are coming our way,"
Niev murmured.
"Yeah, I did. I wanted an explanation. I wanted a confrontation. I wanted him to make it better."
Before I could about-face and head straight to the bar, a knock sounded at the door. I froze. Mr. Tom and Yev looked between each other and me. No strange presence stood on Ivy House soil. A mage strong in magic had been able to fool Ivy House. My summons had been answered.
Chapter 4.
"We should—" I rolled my shoulders, pushing away my anger so I could focus.
"Let me—"
Mr. Tom moved a step in front of me, but I put out my hand. "I will." I pulled open the door slowly, my face surely matching my mood. Grim. A guy of about 30 stood just off the front stoop, his light brown hair disheveled and sticking up at various spots, stubble adorning his sharp chin, and thin eyebrows sloping over light gray eyes. He had his hands in the pockets of his loose jeans. He looked me over, his expression flat. Finally, he pulled his right hand free and dragged a blue note card from his back pocket.
"You wanted me to make this potion?"
I frowned at him. "You're not glowing." He glanced down at himself.
"I altered the potion a little. Hope you don't mind. If you glow, you give yourself away as magical. People will know you're using a spell. This way, no one will know."
He turned back and pointed at the ejection panel.
"Otherwise, the potion's kind of like that spell. Anyone who knows what to watch out for would avoid that."
"I know. That was on purpose." He nodded, turning back.
"I wanted to step on it just to see what it did."
"It wouldn't have done anything. Ivy House can't sense your presence, so she wouldn't have known to trigger it. Otherwise, though, you'd fly like a bird and land on your butt."
He could give Austin a run for his money on expressionlessness.
"Funny,"
he said.
"I would like to see that."
"Hang around for long enough and you probably will. Do you know why you're here?"
He slipped the note card back into his pocket.
"Wait, I'll take that." I put out my hand. He shrugged and handed it over.
"I got a magical summons, it felt like. It was like a tug directing me here. I resisted for a while. My employer doesn't like to share highly paid employees, but—"
His smile was crooked, as though someone else were pulling at his lips.
"It got the better of me, didn't it? Here I am. You need some training or something, right?"
"Your employer." I paused for a moment. "And who is that?" He opened his mouth as though to answer, and then drew in a breath. He shook his head.
"Can't tell, I'm afraid. Physically, I mean. It's a gag spell put on us when we sign up. He's more powerful than me or I'd find a way around it."
He shrugged.
"It's pretty standard practice for the higher level employees."
"Probably should have expected that,"
Niev murmured. "Do you know the story about this house and who I am?" I asked. He looked upward, leaning back to do so.
"Creepy old house. It's cool. But no, I don't know more than that. This town is out of the way. Seems pretty small. Is it magical? I haven't heard of it."
"Not really. I mean, it's becoming magical." I chewed my lip, feeling a strange sort of hesitation. Usually, when someone answered my summons, I invited them in. Some of them got to live here until they were fired or accepted. But for the first time, I didn't want to push the door wide and usher this guy through. Maybe it was all the failed mages before him. Maybe I'd learned not to be so welcoming to strangers. Whatever it was, I didn't step back and play the nice host. "You know what?" I said. "Why don't I have one of my team get you checked into the hotel in town?" I glanced back at Mr. Tom, a silent request for him to get Ulrich or Jasper. "We can meet up at the bar in a few hours and chat. In the meantime, my person can fill you in on some of the particulars about this place." He dug his hand back in his pocket to match the other before stepping back.
"I already got a room there. I wanted to put my stuff down and check out the town before I showed up."
He paused for a moment.
"Precaution."
"Right, so."
Yev stepped forward past me.
"Let's go grab a pint, then. Come on, I'll tell you all about this miserable place and the whack jobs running it."
A car rolled down the street slowly, a newer Ford in midnight blue, the figure inside scouting the houses he or she passed. When the car neared us, though, I nearly lost my stomach.
"It's Jimmy! He's here early!"
Joy bubbled up through me, and I was shoving Yev and the new guy down the walkway before I realized my rudeness.
"Sorry. Hey, what's your name?"
"Sebastian,"
the new guy said.
"Hi, I'm Jessie."
"But you will call her Miss,"
Mr. Tom cut in. I didn't have time to get annoyed as Jimmy stopped in the street, looking through the windshield of his rental car before glancing down at the screen of his phone, trying to find the right house, not noticing me standing out front.
"Yev, head to the bar with Sebastian and fill him in.
I grimaced. This was the first mage that had made it to the door, and he might be the last. He could help me, but if left solely to Nyev's devices, he might not stick around long enough to hear an offer. I had to meet them tonight to make sure he'd stick around. Hopefully Jimmy would be tired from his journey. He'd come all the way from New York, a trip that would have taken a couple planes and a layover. He'd probably want to head to bed early. I could make the meeting work.
Fill Sebastian in. I started again as Jimmy recognized my car in the driveway and then noticed us all standing near the front door.
He frowned. I'd told him about the house. I'd even sent him a picture. But only an in-person tour could do this place justice. Jimmy was seeing why. From the magical shadow that unnaturally shaded the place to the glowing attic light, which was rarely on, to the sheer size as it sprawled across the carefully tended grounds.
"Get some food, maybe. I'll meet you all as soon as I can, okay? I just have to get my visitor settled in."
No point in letting a stranger know how precious my visitor was. I wasn't important enough for someone to hunt Jimmy down all the way in New York where he went to school, but if my son was on hand and things went pear-shaped with this powerful visitor...
"He's a day early,"
Mr. Tom said, stepping farther out to see the car as it pulled into the drive.
"Hopefully he didn't bring a cooler full of food and cheap beer like your parents did."
"Okay, see you in a while,"
Nev motioned Sebastian ahead of her.
"Are we allowed to come out now?"
Ulrich called from inside the house.
"Also, are we in trouble? I promise I wasn't spying on you, Jess, miss. I did like feeling the spice, but I didn't want to feel your wrath, so figured I'd better close it down."
"Shh!"
I batted the air even though he couldn't see me. "Mr. Tom, tell him and Jasper to head into town to watch Sebastian. Tell Austin about him, too. He'll want to keep an eye on things. Don't tell Austin I'm going to ring his bell the next time I see him. I don't want to ruin the surprise."
"Hey, bud!"
I practically ran around the car to grab hold of Jimmy as he climbed out.
"Hi, Mom."
He groaned within my squeeze.
"This house is huge. Is it really yours?"
I reached up to put my palms on both of my son's cheeks, his scruff almost a messy beard, completely unkempt, and his sandy brown hair falling past his eyes and over his ears. His hazel eyes matched mine, as did his thin nose, but he had his father's wide smile and height, over 6 feet tall. I frowned at the hoodie draped across his bony shoulders and the jeans sagging around his hips.
Did you stop eating? What happened to you?